Chapter 22. Wednesday. Library. The Hotel Bellevue was squeezed disagreeably between the M4, the Swindon Tannery, and the city's main electrical substation, hence the name it was popularly known by, the substation. It was the last place one would book a room, even if hygiene weren't an issue, and it seemed to exist only to give other hotels a benchmark for failure. Indeed, the substation had managed to wrestle Clip Joint Magazine's coveted 5-bedbug rating from its only competitor in the southeast, the equally grimy Bastardos in Reading. Josh Candle, 10 places not to visit in Wessex. "Good morning," said Duffy as I walked into the office. "Did the car find you okay?"
"Eventually."
"If you want a different pickup address, we'd appreciate it if you would give us more notice. It helps the special library services to ensure that your route is safe."
"I understand," I said, "and I'm sorry. I was called to the substation hotel this morning. It was, family business." I wasn't going to tell him we'd discovered Krantz, or what remained of him.
"Mrs. Duffy and I spent our honeymoon there. The hum and crackle of the electrical substation was restful."
"It sounds very romantic."
"When we want to rekindle that flame," continued Duffy, "we leave an orbital sander running in the basement. Hums just like a 500 kVA transformer. If we want to hear the crackle of morning dew on the insulators, we have Gizmo play with a cellophane wrapper."
"I'm so hoping Gizmo is a dog."
"A pug."
"Duffy?"
"Yes, ma'am?"
"Do people usually attack the chief librarian as he or she is driven in?" "I was alluding to an incident when someone fired 2 shots at our vehicle as we pulled off the magic roundabout. The vehicle was bulletproof, but even so..."
"Usually, ma'am. The 720% increase in library loans caused by the government's new book duty has caused a 3-day delay on library book availability. When the citizens can't get the books they want, they often vent their fury at the person in charge."
This was, sadly, all too true, and not just about simple loans. Only a month previously, an all-new 007 book was written by that author with a beard whose name I can never remember. James Bond fundamentalists argued that this was a grave and heinous affront to the oeuvre, and warned that if the library stocked it, they would sit outside in silent protest, stroking white cats and thinking fiendish thoughts. And if that had no effect, they would riot. They did, and 2 people, 6 cats and 3 Diana Rigg impersonators lost their lives.
"Do you want to see the Goliath representative first, or shall I make him wait for an hour to show your utter contempt for him and his company?" This would be Lupton Cornball, whom I had met yesterday at the Finnis. "I'll see him first." The phone rang. I reached out, but Duffy beat me to it. "Hello," he said. "Office of the Chief Librarian." He listened for a moment, then looked at me. "I'll ask." He put his hand over the mouthpiece. "Commander Smalls wants to talk to you. She's on the way up."
"Smalls?"
"Okay. Her first, then Goliath. Oh, and I'd like to talk to Councillor Bunty Fairweather. She's in charge of fiscal planning and smite avoidance policy. They've an alternative anti-smite plan cooking, and I want to find out what it is." "She's your 2 o'clock. Shall I push her up to your 11:30?
"Is that straight after Goliath?" I asked, glancing at the clock.
"No, Mrs. Jolly Hilly, the insane Enid Blyton fundamentalist, is after Goliath. Bunty is after them."
"Do I have to talk to insane people?"
"You're a librarian now. I'm afraid it's mandatory."
Okay. Smalls first, then Goliath, then Hilly, then Bunty."
Duffy nodded, made a note on his clipboard, and opened the door to admit Phoebe.
I smiled agreeably. I didn't much care for her, but we needed to get along.
"Commander Smalls," I said, rising to welcome her.
"Chief librarian next," she replied, shaking my hand. I gestured her to the sofas.
"That's a bit of a mouthful," I said. "Better call me Thursday."
"Then you must call me Phoebe. You've recovered well from the attack at the Lobster Hood yesterday."
"I got lucky. One of the hinges from the trap door embedded itself into an aeschylus only inches above my head. Coffee?"
"Thank you." Duffy took the cue and moved silently to the coffee machine, while Phoebe looked around her.
This is very plush.
Libraries have been monstrously overfunded these past 13 years, I said. The librarians had to take industrial action when the city council threatened to have gold taps put in the washrooms. Mind you, that will all change. I think you're getting some of our funding.
50 million that I know of, she said.
I raised an eyebrow. 50 million was a third of our budget.
But we have to fund the special library services out of that, she added.
This made it a lot easier. Wexler's team was expensive.
Tell me, she continued, do you think Colonel Wexler is mad?
Yes, but in a good way. Got anyone on your staff yet?
A few trigger-happy nutters, who were too mentally unstable even for SO5. I told them to sod off. I want to keep gratuitous violence inside books, where it belongs.
Very wise. Your watch is slow.
She looked at me oddly, and then pulled up her sleeve. The watch was a reverso. The face was hidden. She flipped it over. You're right. How did you know?
I can hear it tick, and it's ticking slowly. Not important. Anything on the stolen 13th century codex question?
She pulled out a small notebook and turned to a page marked with a rubber band. Possibly. Out of the 83 reported bibliothefts over the past month, only 2 have the same modus operandi. One in Bath and another in Lancaster. Exactly the same, torn out pages, then destroyed, but with the rest of the book left untouched.
Both by St. Zivilcicks?
Bingo! The first, a gazetteer of taverns in the Oxford area that give credit, and the second, a list of credible excuses to give your bishop if he thinks you're misappropriating church funds. Neither of them valuable, nor particularly rare.
That links the books, I said, wondering if Jack Shit had been there on each occasion. What are your thoughts?
I did some research into St. Zivilcicks, and I was struck by a recurring theme in his life.
You mean his stealing, debauchery, embezzlement, drunkenness, and total absence of pastoral care or moral rectitude?
I was thinking more of his meanness. St. Zivilcicks was notoriously tight-fisted. It was said that Augustus IV, the bouncing Bishop of Salisbury, joked that his idea of eternity would be dinner with St. Zivilcicks and Kevin of Kent, waiting for one of them to pick up the tab.
So?
Zivilcicks would never have used fresh vellum in his books, because it would cut into his drinking funds. He probably used second-hand books, dismantled them, scraped the vellum clean, and then reused them. It's only a guess, but I think the thief was looking for palimpsests.
I could see what she was getting at. A palimpsest was the ghostly image of the original writing that was just still visible on the reused sheet of vellum. If the writing was from a long-lost book, it would be of inestimable value.
Good thought, I murmured. There's more. She reached into her bag and brought out a 13th-century book wrapped in acid-free paper. She placed it on the coffee table and donned a pair of latex gloves to unwrap it. This is Lord Volescamper's copy of St. Zivilcicks's Book of Revealments. It wasn't one of the books that was vandalized by our mystery book damages. I had a look under UV light, and I can just see the original text beneath St. Zivilcicks's prophecies. I'm thinking that all St. Zivilcicks's original works were written on recycled vellum.
Any idea of the source book?
She smiled. Let's see how good you are, Chief Librarian.
She opened the book at a marked page and pushed it across. I looked closely. There was some text written sideways beneath St. Zivilcicks's second revealment, the one predicting the Spanish Armada, or, as he called it, the Sail of the Century. It looks like a copy of the Venerable Keith's Principia Accountissima, I murmured, and Phoebe was suitably impressed.
The Venerable Keith had been a contemporary of St. Zivilcicks's, and also the accountant for the Bishop of Swindon between 1276 and 1294.
The Evadum, as it was known, explained the new science of utilizing loss-making companies to offset tax liability against profit. Monks couldn't hand-copy them fast enough.
There were lots of copies, I said, which was probably why St. Zivilcicks could buy them up cheap to scrape clean and rebind in order to peddle his own rubbish.
I agree, said Phoebe, producing another book, This time, Zivilkix's treatise on herbal remedies for unwanted flaccidity, A Short History of Time. I stared at the two books. It still didn't tell us why Jack Shit and Goliath were destroying parts of worthless 13th century books, even if they did have palimpsests of almost equally banal titles beneath them. Still, I was seeing the Goliath rep next, so it was possible I could rattle that tree a bit and see what fell out.
I know, said Phoebe, sensing my confusion. Doesn't make much sense, does it?
I picked up the phone, punched a button, and asked to be put through to Finisterre. You're right, it makes no sense at all, I said to Phoebe. But at least we know what they're after. James, Thursday. I've got Commander Smalls here, and she's found a link between the vandalizations. St. Zivilkick's books. There have been three, including the one at the Lobster Hood. Place the library's copies under armed guard. I put the phone down, and Smalls got up.
I hope I've been candid, she said.
Very.
In that case, perhaps you can tell me who was in the scriptorium yesterday. I think you're not telling me everything you know.
So I did, which wasn't much, but Jack Shit's presence clearly implicated Goliath, which she didn't like the sound of. Few people did. Tangling with the Goliath Corporation generally left you in one of two places, inside a wooden box with a grieving family outside, or inside a wooden box under 6 feet of soil with family wondering where you were. The former was if they didn't hold a grudge. I'd probably be the latter.
Ready for the Goliath rep? Asked Duffy, as soon as Phoebe had left.
My cell phone rang. It was Millen. Give me 2 minutes, I said to Duffy.
Millen?
I'm outside the hotel, he said, and you were right. The Goliath clean-up squad has just left. Took everything in the back of a van.
Millen had tracked Krantz down to the CD substation hotel at 3 that morning. He'd found Krantz face down on the floor of room 27, stone dead and looking pretty dreadful, even for a corpse at the substation. A quick examination confirmed what Landon had thought. The corpse wasn't Krantz, but his day player. Next to him was an empty Tupperware sarcophagus, and no sign of any others. He had come here, activated a new day player, waited until he was transferred, then left. The room left few clues. We still had no idea what he was doing. But we did know that Krantz had another couple of days of life left in him, and would be stronger, smarter, and fitter. He would be harder to find, too, and when found, harder to tackle. Still, at least we didn't have to worry about reporting any of this to the authorities. The Goliath cleaners would have removed all trace of Krantz, and since they were experts, left intact the crusty mat of human hair, spilled beer, and dried body fluids that the substation impudently referred to as carpet. I thanked Millen, told him to keep looking for the new Krantz, and rang off. I turned back to Duffy. Listen, this may sound seriously weird, but I might turn up and not be myself one day. And if that happens, I need you to call my husband on this number and tell him that his wife isn't who she thinks she is.
You're wrong.
About what?
It's not seriously weird. It's obscenely weird.
How can you not be you? And how am I supposed to know, anyway?
Easily. See this tattoo? It's to remind ourselves that Jenny is a mindworm. Not mine, of course, but my husband's. I'll explain about Aornis one day. And if you're wondering why I have the tattoo on my hand and not Landon's, I meant to find out this morning, but forgot to drop in to Image Inc. again.
Duffy stared at me, single eyebrow raised.
What tattoo?
This one.
But he was right. I didn't have one.
Damn. Replaced again.
I thought it was weird that I could hear Phoebe's watch ticking slowly, I muttered. I thought quickly, which fortunately I was now able to do, and worked my movements backward. I'd struggled to get into the Daimler at the substation hotel, so I was real me then. I could remember arriving at the secure entrance at the rear of the library, then walking through the building to the front office and riding up the elevators. Real me was somewhere between those places, in a store cupboard, I hoped, and more comfortable this time. I called Landon and told him what had happened.
It wasn't unexpected, he said, after a moment or two of reflection. Do you want me to come and kill you again?
That's very sweet of you, darling, but I need to make sure real me is safe. The password was, has to be there overnight after you say, when it absolutely positively. Landon was silent for a moment.
You didn't have to tell me you'd been replaced, did you?
I needed you to know you could trust me.
Okay, now I trust you, whatever body you happen to be in.
Thank you, Pumpkin. Have the car in the loading bay at lunchtime, so we can bundle real me in the back. And Landon?
Yes?
I'm having those feelings again.
There's nothing you can do about them, so just think of something else until we put an end to you, and we can have you back.
I'm not going to get rid of this me. Not yet. There was another long silence from Landon.
I hope you know what you're doing.
I hope so too, but I'm not offering any guarantees.
That's my girl.
He rang off, and I turned to Duffy, who had the largest frown I have ever seen etched in the forehead of anyone before or since.
Okay, he said in a resigned manner. Now, are we ready for the Goliath rep?
I jumped up and glanced in the mirror behind the desk. I looked sickeningly well, and I wanted Lupton to think I was the real damaged me. He knew about the contents of the Tupperware sarcophagus, and his knowing I was a Thursday day player was the sort of interest I didn't want right now. I'm going to need a walking stick, a red felt marker, and a box of band-aids, and you're going to have to be quick.
Certainly, ma'am. But I must say I'm concerned. Your behaviour seems somewhat erratic.
Ha! I said with a grin. You haven't seen anything yet.